Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley. Brought to you once again by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea, Republican, and legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. And it's about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer, but moving to action, about Luke 17, 20 through 21. And folks, I'm sorry my voice is a little bit hoarse today, but we're going to soldier through. So now, having been questioned by the Pharisees as to when the kingdom of God was coming, he, Jesus, answered them and said, "The kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed, nor will they say, 'Look, here it is,' or 'There it is.' For behold, the kingdom of God is in your midst," or within you. It's the Greek word entos, used one other time in Scripture. And in that other time, the Scripture talks about the cleaning of the inside of a cup. So where we go, not just as a temple of the Holy Spirit, as believers, but where we go, the kingdom of God expands, and the evil one's kingdom retracts. That's why it's so important to live your Christianity beyond the four walls of the church. Get out there. Make it happen. Get out there, live out your Christianity, live out the calling of praying for people, of praying for everything from healing to deliverance, of getting out there and preaching the gospel of the kingdom to them, showing tangible love to those folks. Now, we're admonished to be wise about the ways the evil works in the world, but not to become evil. That's a very important distinction, because the kingdom is within us. And if you think about it, if you think about where we're at in this country today, I believe there is going to be a powerful move of God. Back during the Azusa Street Revival, in the early part of the 19th or 20th century, I guess, but 1900s, early part of the 1900s, there was a prophecy from the Azusa Street Revival. There would be a revival even greater about 100 years from then. She's talking about 2016 timeframe. I keep getting the sense, not Azusa Street, but Azusa State, right? A place where there is revival, a place where the power of God comes down and it's unmistakable. And we're in the presence of God, and you see lives changed, and you see addictions forever gone, and you see neighbors helping neighbors and getting to know each other again. That's what we're supposed to be doing as Christians, because if we fail as Christians, the result is conflict. Now, there are some out there, and I'll be very blunt, they're trying to provoke conflict right now. The Attorney General of the state of Washington, by trying to take people's guns, is provoking a conflict. Because people know that if you lose guns, just like that 28-year-old kid in Venezuela, the tyranny follows right on its heels. And the corollary to that is, tens of thousands, if not millions of people die as a result because they can't defend themselves. People understand that. And I'm going to talk about a sheriff here in Washington State who is standing up right now and saying no. And we have session coming next week. We all together need to realize it's going to be all of us on the line. And I am going to be calling for a group of activists and leaders to come together to discuss what we're going to do to fight this in the legislature. And I've got an idea of those folks. But the fact of the matter is, we have the opportunity to stand now. And people say, "Matt, why stand if you're going to lose?" You missed the point then. You completely missed the entire point. We're called to do the right thing regardless. And in fact, all of human history has been changed only by an irate, tireless minority. God has only used the unlikely, the unexpected, what the world would call weak, to change the world. That's the way it's always been. The story of Gideon is great because it's like, hey, Gideon, you got too many dudes. Okay, you got too many guys, too many soldiers. I want everybody to know that this is me helping you. You got too many guys. Get rid of all those guys. Okay, 300 against thousands. Okay, now that's more like it. That's more like the odds God wants, right? I love that idea. I love that picture because it should encourage all of us to get out there. It really should. And I think God knew before the beginning of time that we would be here right now today, put in this place. He knew before the beginning of time. And I think that shouldn't just be an encouragement. I think it should be a calling. We're here for a reason. And what a time it is to be alive. What a time. Well, that brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing. And I'm going to go through a couple of things. There's a couple of things breaking. One of them is just, it is the culmination of craziness. Okay, I'll just come out and say that. Okay, culmination of craziness. All right. If you have been watching the Middle East, if you've been listening to this show, you understand that Turkey is central to what happens in the Middle East, that we need to pay attention to Turkey, and we need to pay attention to who is aligning with them or what alliances are being formed with Turkey and whatever other countries. What we're seeing today, according to Debka File, is fairly startling. Erdogan is calling now the leader of Turkey for a joint Turkish-Russian-Iranian control of the U.S. pullout of Syria in the face of Moscow's veto that Turkey can go in. Now, Moscow is averse to the Turkish army moving into northern Syria. Part of it is they want a buffer. They've always wanted a buffer, the Russians have. The United States has traditionally been an ally of the Kurds who are in that area right now, northern Iraq, northern Syria, and also northern Iran and part of Turkey too. But they believe that if they give the Kurds a homeland, that'll mean independence for the Kurds in that region. That's where the Turks are kind of going the other way on. So this doesn't fit in to the Ottoman Empire idea. In addition to that, Erdogan really precipitated a crisis by snubbing the U.S. advisor and again threatening the Kurds, and this was on January 8th. So he turned down the U.S. advisor and they said he didn't want to talk, so he's playing hardball right now. And he's playing hardball because, as many people are speculating, he wants to reestablish the Ottoman Empire. He wants to reestablish the caliphate that was abolished in Turkey in 1924. And later, in 1928, Hassan al-Banna created the Muslim Brotherhood to reestablish the caliphate. And later still, Said Qutb gave the philosophy for the Muslim Brotherhood. And that's what they've been pushing. Well, when the Muslim Brotherhood was kicked out of Egypt, guess where they went? They went to Turkey. And there are many pictures, documentary evidence of Erdogan working and meeting with the Muslim Brotherhood. And the problem then becomes the Muslim Brotherhood influenced the United States. How is that going to play in? So think about, as you're looking at the Middle East, this power struggle between Saudi Arabia and Turkey. can become a direct struggle in the United States. It's important to understand this geopolitical shaping up that's happening over there, and Jordan aligning with Turkey. So the former caretakers of Mecca and Medina and the Hashemite kingdom that lost that to the Saud, you know, House of Saud in the 1800s, they're pushing toward Turkey so they can reclaim their rightful role. It kind of explains how things are shaping up over there. But this is really important to understand. Really, really important to understand. All right, we're going to move next to Ukraine. Cyber attacks before the Sea of Azov incident. Still not hearing any finality of this, so I'm just going to keep this kind of in your minds until we get kind of final resolution for that. Britain, Mark Sutherland, continuing to say that by March of this year, there is going to be a no-deal Brexit, and it's going to be like dominoes for the European Union. We'll see. Because you see the protest shaping up. This is an anti-globalist movement. This is the anti-one world government movement. Anti-globalism. And it's spreading. It is spreading. So, Venezuela, I talked about the regret of the gun ban by this 28-year-old kid. I think it's really, it's critical there to understand that they just didn't have the same culture, tradition, and heritage that you have in the Western United States, where you have the Scots, Irish, the Irish, some of the Chinese, the Germans, you have the Italians, you had the Scandinavian immigrants that came across the plains. They had to have firearms. And they understood, many of them who were fleeing regimes that had oppressed them, that the only way to remain free was to remain armed. And that culture, tradition, heritage, and belief has continued into the present day. And we cannot give that up. We cannot. If they are going to do what I am already hearing that they're going to do, they're going to try to ban all so-called assault weapons, do magazine bans, they're going to raise taxes. But here's the scary part. They want to go through medical records to try to determine whether or not you're fit to own a firearm. And whoever, we don't know this is, it's probably a bureaucrat, almost certainly a bureaucrat, is going to make that decision. You remember what happened up in Bonner County, Idaho, a few years ago, where Sheriff Wheeler, Representative Heather Scott, myself, stood with a Navy veteran, okay, who really arbitrarily was going to have his firearms taken, confiscated, and they backed down. Now, Washington, they're trying to bring this in kind of through the back door. And this, again, you know, it begs the question, how are they going to determine who's fit? And this is why I want to go to this breaking story today that is, I guess, should be unsurprising to me, but it's not. The APA, American Psychological Association guidelines, are now warning of traditional masculinity. Okay? That it harms young boys because of too much competitiveness. Parents are playing with fire when they instill boys with traditional masculinity. Apparently, they want us all to rush out and buy skinny jeans and lattes or something. I don't know. Okay? And it says, this is from the Washington Times, that men, while remaining sensitive to the field's androcentric past, 40 years of research shows that traditional masculinity is psychologically harmful, and that socializing boys to suppress their emotions, in other words, don't cry, suck it up. I am glad my dad taught me that, because you know something? When you are overseas and you're in the middle of nowhere and there's nobody else to come and help you, sometimes you got to suck it up. And that's what made America great. That's why the armies of Europe, Italy and Germany, could not defeat the United States of America because people sucked it up. So now what they want to do, they want to take that away, of course, right? I'm passionate about that because this is the wussification of America's males. You can't take the guns away. Okay, we'll just make you all a bunch of wimps, right? And it says next that socializing boys to suppress emotion causes damages that echoes both inwardly and outwardly. The integrated nature of masculinity. So hunting, boxing, learning how to defend yourself. Now, okay, here's why I tie this into guns. Okay. So if the American Psychological Association is essentially saying it is a mental disorder to be a stoic, competitive man, okay, is that going to be a reason medically that they would want to take your guns away? You see what I'm saying? And it's a legitimate question when they publish garbage like this. Being a man is a mental disorder. I mean, where are we at in America? Are you kidding me? Being a man is a mental disorder. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I had a listener just text me who said, what's wrong with skinny jeans and lattes? Here's the deal. If you're asking that question, just stop everything you're doing. Go away for a few days, okay? And just regather your thoughts, all right? Regather yourself. All right, we'll move on to the next thing on the national front. Facebook being used by Democrats to suppress GOP vote. According to WorldNet Daily, an ex-Obama official bought ads on fake pages during the midterms to suppress the GOP vote. Wow. By the way, that is a KGB tactic. American Engagement Technologies bought ads for two Facebook pages, and they were designed to give the impression that they were operated by disgruntled conservatives rather than Democratic operatives. There it is in black and white. Projection. All right. Apparently, the Dems still being investigated for using KGB tactics against former Senate candidate Roy Moore. The Fed's looking at continuing to drive the economy down prior to the 2020 elections. We're going to keep our eyes on that, figure out what's going on. Regional front, like I said, next week we're going into session. It's going to be a fight for the heart and soul of Washington State, okay? This is going to be a fight. I am going to be putting out a lot of information on Facebook. I'll be doing some videos on Facebook. I'm also going to be posting them to alternative media sites, Liberty Rush, Gab AI, MeWe, and Local Activist, among others. So pay attention to some of these sites because you're going to get your information about what you can do to help fight back, to protect our right to bear arms, to help our veterans, to stop this madness that is going on in Washington State right now. Also on the regional front, Avista Hydro One rejected by Idaho. That's a big deal. A really big deal, actually. And it looks like Avista now wants to meet with me. This is going to be interesting. So, and I am looking so forward to our guest today because this is going to be a great conversation, especially about toxic masculinity. What a great subject to come up. All right. I want to move next to the local front. I want to tell you about a great sheriff here in Washington State. Klickitat County's Bob Songer came out and said, I am not going to enforce I-1639. It's unconstitutional. It violates both the federal constitution and state constitution. I took an oath to defend both. Amen. Would it be great if every sheriff in Washington State came out and said, no, we are not going to enforce an unconstitutional law. So that gives you listening to Patriot Radio today something to do here over the next few weeks. Call your local sheriff. Tell them to stand with Bob Songer, Klickitat County. Tell them to stand with him, okay? Doesn't matter if you're in Asotin County. Doesn't matter if you're in Garfield County. It doesn't matter if you're way, way up in Chelan County. Call your sheriff. Get him to stand with Bob Songer. Let's create a critical mass on this so we've got the sheriff standing with us to stand to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of Washington. All right. That's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Please pray for me and Victoria, also for my voice to get back here. And if you could, go to Patriot Radio US, like the page, check out some of these alternative media sites, friend me on those as well. And remember, Patriot Radio is also on iTunes and Podbean if you missed the podcast. And another shout out to our great trucking community out there. Love you guys, man. I love you and love all your comments and your encouragement over the years too. All right. Excited about this. Kevin Jackson of the Black Sphere is, quote, a God-fearing, military-supporting, gun-packing, American-loving, conservative warrior. Couldn't say it better myself. I love that. He also is not just an outspoken conservative, but he has revealed one of the most intriguing relationships of one of the least-known conspirators that's really been trying to undermine President Donald Trump. So he's also a radio show host, and if you get a chance, you can check out the website, theblacksphere.net. Kevin Jackson, this is great and an honor to have you on Patriot Radio today. How are you doing, my friend? Well, it looks like he's not on yet, so I will wait till the producer tells me so. He wrote an article about the least known conspirator. And when you hear the story behind this, you're going to say, oh, that makes a ton of sense. He also has written extensively about this use of race as a political weapon in the United States of America. So if you get a chance, like I said, you can check out the Black Sphere. You can also go to racepimping.com. What a great name for a website, racepimping.com. All right. I want to jump back to the legislature quickly since I've got a little bit more time right now. Okay. Next week, there is going to be a hearing on Tuesday on the low carbon fuel standards. This is AKA a tax increase on your gasoline. Okay. It can increase the cost of your gasoline by another 30 cents. Some say up as high as a dollar. We're going to get some new facts and figures. I'll get those out to you. Either way, it is a dramatic increase with limited benefit. The greatest way that we could reduce carbon emissions, if we really even needed to, but let's say we do, is to manage our forests better. Number one way, number one, above everything else, manage our forests better. And that means selective logging. It means use of biochar. And it means the use, of economic development in our rural communities through the private sector, even though they may be logging on state land. You'll notice fire maps. All the fires in the Western United States correspond very clearly to federal land ownership in the Western United States. Also, less so, but also state land ownership. So just look at this stuff from that kind of perspective, and that is coming right out of the gate on Tuesday. Like I said before, Attorney General Bob Ferguson coming out with what he believes is an assault weapons ban, so-called assault weapons ban, and magazine bans, and higher taxes, a new income tax, a new carbon tax. This is in addition to that low-carbon fuel standard. So, folks, they are really trying to turn this into the tax and spend, take your guns, take your rights, legislative session. This is the most pivotal legislative session in Washington State in the last two decades at least.
I have
them. So, all right. So get involved. All right. Now it is my great pleasure to introduce Kevin Jackson of the Black Sphere, a God-fearing, military-supporting, gun-packing, American-loving conservative warrior. Kevin Jackson, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Good to talk to you, man.
Hey, so I'm sorry my voice is going a little bit. I've been speaking a lot over the last 3 days, but man, I love everything you've been writing. I do want to start kind of out of the gate. Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you're kind of rising up super fast in politics and the political world right now, because you just come forward with common sense. So tell listeners a little bit about yourself and also some of the websites that you're hosting.
All right. Well, a little quick background. Poor black kid growing up in rural America. I grew up on a 25,000-acre cattle ranch. And my grandparents worked for a wealthy white family of Republicans. And my grandparents were Democrats, but, you know, this family treated us like family. And so I would notice the difference between what my grandparents would say and what they thought and then how this family was. And it didn't compute. So long story short, great family, sent me to military school. I went to Scott on scholarship, went to Marine Military Academy, got a scholarship to go to SMU, Southern Methodist University, got degrees in electrical engineering, computer science, and math, started making money. You know, hearing all the nonsense about woe is me, black this, black that. Now, this is being a child of the 60s, growing up in the 70s, coming of age in the 80s, making money in the 90s, and then, you know, getting into the Obama era and all this other stuff. And I'm just watching this evolve, this nonsense evolve in America, where you just can't satisfy leftists, and they infantilize black kids and black people, not just kids, making us look like we're too stupid to get into college or to get jobs and blah, blah, blah. So as my grandmother would say, you know, we complained if we had a ham under each arm, we were asking for bread. So in recognizing that craziness, when I got out of management consulting, I consulted for the world's largest companies, traveled the world doing it, got very successful at it, had my own family and stuff, and it was still going on. And with the election of Obama, I said, it's only going to get worse. And people were like, no, Kevin, it'll get better, man. Race relations will be easy, you know, whatever. I said, you people are crazy if you think black folks are going to get a black president and think, okay, America's suddenly great. It's going to be the opposite. And certainly it was. So that's when I went to work 10 years ago. So when you talk about me being in rising or an up-and-comer, I've been doing this now for a decade, having retired from management consulting in 2009. And what I noticed was exactly what's happening right now, the stupidity of fighting over a wall and the idea that Democrats will tell you a wall doesn't stop people from getting in. It's stupid. Fighting over things like NFL multimillionaire black guys kneeling because of the amount of crime, or kneeling supposedly because black kids are getting shot by cops when they know the amount of criminality in the black community. It's just leftism on steroids. It's idiocy, you know, on any drug you want to call it, because it's just gone crazy. And I don't blame them. I blame us. We've allowed it. So I started my radio show 10 years ago, kjradio.com. I started blogging, and it's now turned into I don't call it a media outlet, but theblacksphere.net, and that's S-P-H-E-R-E, theblacksphere.net. And I talk about real truth to issues that most people are afraid of. We've lost our First Amendment rights, because if you say the wrong thing, you can get fired. I don't know if your listeners know about me, but I got fired from Fox because I tweeted that the women who were accusing Kavanaugh of being a gang rapist and a, you know, whatever else, I called them lying skanks. And quite frankly, I don't think skanks are a hard enough word. But, oh, you got to take it back. I don't have to take anything back. I'm not taking it back. I'm not taking back my attack on the Me Too movement, the I Believe Her BS movement, and all the other things that are making men out to be the worst thing on earth. Men are amazing people. We raise, especially conservative men, we know how to raise men. Conservative women know how to raise real women. We are the only people keeping this country together. And so I'm not allowing the left to dictate who I am, what I'm about. They can call, you know, they call white folks racist. They call me a step and fetch it Uncle Tom and a bunch of other stuff. And they can call me whatever they want. But I know who I am, and I know who the people listening to your program are. We are the best people, not just in America, folks. Listen up. We are the best human beings on the planet.
Period.
Period.
I love that. I love the fact, too, you know, I did this. I started in the radio business 10 years ago. And it's like all of a sudden when people notice that you've written something, that you're all of a sudden brand new. I appreciate that comment that you made. I want to go straight to it because you hit some issues that people kind of all the color drains out of their face, no pun intended, and they just you know what I mean? They're just like, we can't talk about this. What the titles of one of the books that I read, I love the title, is The Big Black Lie. What is that? What does that mean? Why should we be dialoguing about these things?
Well, so The Big Black Lie, the subtitle of that is How I Learned the Truth About the Democrat Party. And it was funny because I took a book from my high school library years ago and read about all the great things that blacks had done. And I was never demoralized by slavery or the lack of civil rights. And when I studied history, I knew who took our rights away. It was Democrats. 284,000 Democrats died to keep black people slaves, and 386,000 Republicans died to keep us out of slavery, to take us out of slavery. So I knew the math, and I knew which side fought for me. And with Jim Crow laws and all these other things that we talked about, it was all Democrats. So what pissed me off when I wrote the book was essentially Democrats were trying to pretend that they had done so much for black people, and we just willy-nilly give our vote to them. And I go, and I will never vote for a Democrat, just philosophically alone. I will never vote for a Democrat. So that was the impetus for the book, and it was my life, my coming of age, and how people sort of believe that I should be a Democrat. You know, it's just the way black people grow up. Kevin, everybody who asked me, Kevin, so when did you stop being a Democrat? And I go, I was never stupid enough to be a Democrat. So don't ask me when I stopped. And so that was the impetus for the book. And it was my life coming through this supposed racially charged living in the South. And I explained in that book that the racism that they wanted me to see did not exist. And I prove it in that book, and it's probably, honest to God, I'm not saying this because it's my book. It is one of the best coming-of-age books, not only from a political perspective, but how you create a warrior. That's what I tell anybody. Let your 15-year-old, 16-year-old son or daughter read that book. They will be changed forever. They will think differently, and they will become a warrior. And I explain, because people would ask me, you know, Kevin, how are you so fearless in your conviction? And I go, isn't everybody? And as I started thinking about it, you know, looking back, I went, no, they're not. Most of the time, people, as Thoreau said, most men live lives of quiet desperation. They won't say anything. People right now, you know this, Matt, they talk about Donald Trump, the left, and people who love and support Donald Trump don't say a word. They just go, oh, okay, and they scuttle off. Say something about Donald Trump with me. I'll say, I love Donald Trump, and I can't stand Hillary Clinton, and you'd have to be a moron to vote for Hillary Clinton. And that's exactly my answer every time, because I want them to come into a debate and talk to a warrior, because I can give you 5 million reasons to vote for Donald Trump, but I can't give you one to vote for Barack Obama, to vote for Hillary Clinton, or to ever vote for a Democrat.
So, Kevin, real quick, I served 10 years in the military. I was talking about this at the monologue at the top of the hour. When I served overseas, I thanked God that my father, when I was a kid, told me to suck it up, told me to tough it up, really stretched me beyond anything I could think on hikes and going out in the woods and doing those kind of things, right? Because when I got overseas and I'm in Iraq and we're by ourselves, you got to suck it up. You don't have a choice at that point. And I was shocked today, and I want to get your take on this, and I shouldn't have been shocked. It's nothing really surprises me or should surprise me anymore. But the American Psychological Association comes out today and says that traditional masculinity, the suck it up, tough it up, be a warrior masculinity, is actually harmful, and we should do away with that. What is your reaction to that?
My reaction to that is, okay, if you're one of the girly men that want to listen to that, follow along. But trust me, your wife is going to leave you for a warrior. Because there is no question in my mind that feminists can talk about it all they want. And let me just enlighten the audience. I don't care about most hardcore feminists. When she sees a real man, it tingles sensations she doesn't even know she has in her body. And that's because we are definitely, you know, different. We're wired differently. And it's the same way with a guy. When we see a woman who knows how to be a real woman, not one of these feminazis, it's a very attractive quality. And it's a very attractive quality. And I'm not talking about for some macho, you know, in your face guy. I'm talking about a guy who understands his power, his ability. And he understands how to use it properly. There is nothing more sexy to a woman than that. So if you want to train girly men, go for it. I have four sons that know how to be real men, and they will come and, you know, and when you're on vacation, just call them. They'll come over and hang out with your girl wife or your girlfriend until you get home. But she's eventually going to leave you.
Thank you. That's perfect. I want to shift gears a little bit. And go into another book that you wrote, and there's kind of a provocative statement, and I like that because it really challenges you to think, and that's the whole point. We need to start talking, and we need to start thinking. We need to start reading again. Race pimping has cost America trillions of dollars. Tell the listeners about the book, kind of what brought it about, what that means, and does it really cost trillions of dollars? Why?
Oh. Yeah, it really is trillions. And so I wrote that book as a joke at first because me and a buddy of mine, a black guy, we were talking about how easy white people are to just get over on. You know, you accuse a white person of being a racist and they're ready to hand the keys to their car, right? And so it was a joke. So we wrote about it as this, you know, it was a ShamWow commercial. You white people can get in on the race hustle of Jesse Jackson and you don't have to be black. Now, this was before the time of Dolezal. You know, whereas, cause she made out like a bandit before the time of Sean King. And, you know, we saw it as a joke, but it got big enough to where I went, you know what? It's no longer 30 pages. It's a 130 page book that's really kind of funny. But here's what's very interesting. So one of the things in the book I talk about is the proliferation of the social justice agenda. Go look at any college or university. Right now, there was a story. The University of Michigan pays $10.6 million a year to somebody at that school that has social justice or something like that in the title of their, you know, in other words, there are people dedicated to diversity, inclusion, social justice in their title. $10.6 million a year. The person who runs the diversity and inclusion organization there makes $408,000 a year. The least paid employee makes around $45,000. And there's something like 93 people at the University of Michigan who are dedicated to some form of social justice, diversity, and inclusion. Now, let me ask you, simple question, folks. We have what's called historically black colleges and universities where blacks can go to school. They were set up by Republicans under the Freedmen's Bureau. So black kids can get an education. They can also go to the University of Michigan, and I'm sure there's plenty of them. There's lots of Latinos, there's lots of Asians or whatever. So what exactly are they spending $10.6 million a year doing? Nothing. They're making us believe that all this diversity and inclusion must happen in order for us to be a happier society. But here's what's really interesting. Go look at the most homogeneous societies on the planet. I know the number. The United States doesn't come into the picture until we're like number 92. The top most homogeneous countries, meaning they are almost monolithically one nationality, 18 of the top 20 are African. You will never hear a leftist say, we need to bring more diversity to Somalia. We need more Mexicans in Somalia. We need more white people or Guatemalan midgets in Somalia. They never say it. And oh, by the way, of the 65.3 million people who are seeking asylum or running from one of their countries, the most in the history of man, 99% of them come from countries of color. Where do they want to go, Matt? To countries that are white, that are mostly white. So we talk about diversity as if white people are evil, as if America is 98% monolithically white, and you'll hear the Democrats talk about this on the border wall. They don't want the browning of America. Well, let me tell you this. As a black man in America, knowing what happens in black and brown countries, I don't want the browning of America. I'm very comfortable with you white folks.
Why do you think the Democrats just keep doubling down on this lie? You know, a social justice warrior is always lie. They double down on the lie they project. Why do they keep doubling down on this lie that, no, the wall is not going to actually have an effect? Because I think they're actually turning Americans against them by doing this garbage.
Yeah, they are. Well, okay, so quick answer. On the wall, the fact is it gets them votes. I mean, the Democrats say we're for border protection, but they've done nothing. Trump has done everything you're supposed to be doing for border wall protection. He's addressing opioids, fentanyl, drug drug use in general, gangs, terrorism, you name it. He's given you every reason, and he's addressed all of it. He's sending MS-13 gang members home, criminals home. He's added border patrol, border security. He's talking about making companies pay if they, hire illegals. He's addressing it piecemeal by piecemeal, exactly the way he's supposed to do it. The Democrats know it translates into votes. Go look at the 2020 census and what everybody's afraid of. They're afraid that they're going to ask that one question: are you a citizen or not? Now, we're talking about the census where we apportion congressmen. They don't want to ask that question because California, Massachusetts, Colorado, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona are all would lose massive congressional people if they have to answer that question. Now, going back to the original thing, when you say, well, what's happening with the, why do people want to do it? I just told you, there's a guy making $408,000 a year as head of diversity for the University of Michigan. At every college, 2,000 of the colleges and universities, there's a guy like him. And there's 90 other people like him in those other roles. $10 million per college and university on diversity. We are undoubtedly, unquestionably, the most diverse country on the planet, bar none. We have every ethnicity, every racial makeup. We have every religious, secular, you name it. We have them all. And yet we're spending a fortune on diversity when we could give classes on diversity. So think about, I'm an electrical engineer with a computer science and a math degree, and I couldn't come out of college and make more money than the guy running the diversity. I couldn't even come out of college make more money than the median person making whatever they make at the University of Michigan, but median person making $120,000 a year. For what? Because they run the diversity part of Title IX, or they run the diversity for the University of Michigan's Health Sciences Center. They have a diversity coordinator for every single school and every single education system. So they're creating their own jobs with nonsense and using our tax dollars to do it. Now, here's the final comment. Are kids getting any smarter? Are we solving more of the world's problems with this diversity crap? No, we create nothing but a bunch of whiny babies that want to kneel on a football field when they make $100 million over 7 years.
Well said. Skinny jeans and lattes. That's what I said at the beginning of the top of the hour. Up here in Washington, that's really truly the case. Anyway, I want to go to the main article that I have you on for today, and that is, who is the least known conspirator that is against Trump? And kind of, if you could, paint the picture about what's happening inside the administration with not just infiltration, but the subversion of Donald Trump almost at every level.
Right. So if that particular article, the resolve is it's the wife of Rosenstein. If you go back and you look all along the way with how it all gets connected in that article, and you finally figure out where she fits in it all, and the fact that Rod Rosenstein, who's running the FBI, at least temporarily, he's supposedly going to quit now, but his wife, all along the way with the IRS and all these various agencies, she was one of the fixers as well. And so that was the resolve in that particular article. But look, you'd have to be a mental midget at this point not to understand that every clandestine agency, every part of the Obama administration was trying to keep Donald Trump from being president and then trying to get him impeached or, in some sort of trouble afterwards. And there are going to be other names on there. There's a guy, his name is John Carlin, who plays very much in the, and Bongino does a good job in his book, Spygate, of connecting these dots as well. But when the bow breaks, because I don't know why Rosenstein's leaving, I suspect it creates a lot of problems for the Democrats because they no longer have a fixer. Mueller is being sued by three Russian bankers who now have asked for freedom of information stuff to come out. He's being sued by Jerome Corsi, and that case, I think, today they heard that case. So there's a lot that's going to come out, and here's the deal. The Democrats are completely guilty, and I just want people to understand, you can't keep the lid. They could keep the lid on something like this. I mean, even as big as it is, but they can't keep it without Hillary being president. So I'm anxious to see what comes out, but the big reveal in that article is how much Rosenstein's wife played a picture in this.
Well, let's talk about some specifics with that. So Lisa Barsoomian represented Robert Mueller 3 times, James Comey 5 times, Barack Obama 45 times, Kathleen Sebelius 56 times, Bill Clinton 40 times, and Hillary Clinton 17 times. And you don't hear about her at all in the media.
Yeah, and what's more interesting to me is that the guy who's been running justice and who orchestrated the whole thing, who told President Trump, you need to fire Comey, then the left got mad at him, then Comey, before he gets fired, leaks information that then means that he needs to recommend a special counsel. He recommends Mueller, and then you now add in his wife, and you start to see the bigger picture. So, look, it's so incestuous in D.C., as I said earlier, there's no way that the biggest moron on the planet cannot see how this is. And the Democrats know it, too. The same way when you made the comment, the Democrats are in big trouble on the border, because there's nobody you're going to convince that a wall doesn't stop people from coming in. That it's common sense that that's the case. So the more you try to defy my common sense, the more I go, wait a minute, I can't trust you. All along, in every one of these scenarios, there is nothing that you can look at with the Democrats and be trustworthy about. There's nothing they've done that's trustworthy.
So the question then becomes, I mean, really begs the question, if Rosenstein is leaving, why is he leaving? Is there really going to be a prosecution of some of these people?
The short answer is yes. In terms of why is he leaving, I think Rosenstein sees the writing on the wall. This is my personal view. I think he understands there is nothing else I can do. I've run as much interference as I can. Mueller was supposed to release his report right after the midterms. Then he asked the grand jury to extend another 6 months, so that's going to go into July. Well, who's he going after? He's got Russians that are never going to be prosecuted, Papadopoulos, who served a few days, Flynn, who's probably going to be freed. He's got a Manafort, who most people are looking at going, I still don't get it. And he's got some Swedish banker. Those are his indictments. It's amounted to nothing. So who is he going to have to go after? He's got to go after the Podestas. He's got to go after the Clinton gang across the board, not just the Podesta boys, but a lot of the Clinton people that got immunity during the time of Comey. So when it's all said and done, it's going to burn their ship down to a degree that, I mean, I think it's going to be the biggest political scandal in history, and it will go down this year. But now they're going to keep fighting. Don't misunderstand me. I've been on the road for a couple of days, but I heard they've launched new investigations, and they're going to use subterfuge. But they never bet on a fighter like Donald Trump. And what I think Trump is going to benefit from is the more that he continues to make people understand that when he called them fake news and calls them liars, that it's true, the more clout he gets. And I think those numbers will start to rise. When you get rid of Gallup and all these guys and Trump's real numbers come out, at some point this year, it's going to be the breaking point for him.
So if that's the case, then what is the fallout? And does Trump actually have enough people around him to carry out those kind of prosecutions? Because that's the other question that's there. How many people are actually not part of the deep state?
Well, I don't have an answer for that, but here's what I will tell you. I believe Donald Trump is one of the shrewdest guys on the planet. I have met him twice, and I'll be honest, the first couple of times I wasn't it was very just in passing, and he was a nice guy. But as I've really watched his style, I said, this guy is shrewd. Man, he is clever like a fox. So why did he keep Rosenstein was one of my questions, and I wrote about it recently. Why would you keep a guy that has those many connections to the Clintons and then make him the acting AG when you know that's the case? And I think, as I said, he gave the Democrats enough rope to hang themselves. And I think, honestly, he saw Rosenstein as a way to figure out who the other rats were on the ship. And so you go, if you look at the people who have defected that are off the radar, not the Comeys, I'm talking about that are gone, not the Comeys and the McCabes and the Strucks. Some of the people below them that have left the Bureau that never would have left, not in 100 years. That's a job for life, okay? They've left. If you look at that, I think that's Donald Trump and those guys really figuring out who they were. I think the Trump team figured out who they were. I believe some of those guys are turning state's evidence. I think that that's what's going on behind the scenes. Now, keep in mind, this is all conjecture on my part, but Trump has set these guys up, kept enough, as the old saying goes, keep your, you know, your friends close, your enemies closer. And I think Rosenstein was one of those that he kept closer. And so Rosenstein now sees it as, all right, something. I see Rosenstein leaving as a real sign that something big is ready to happen.
I agree with you 100%. And it'll be interesting to see if that's within the next month, 2 months, 3 months, or it'll be, you know, kind of over the summer. It seems very clearly that there are some people out there that are trying to drive the economy down prior to the election in 2020. I know that's still to bear out, you know, with some numbers, but it really seems like there's some intentional actions being taken to drive the economy down and make Trump look bad. And I think when you look at this whole picture, you do get the sense that it's kind of rats off a fleet, you know, a sinking ship, right?
At least that's the way it
seems to me.
Yeah, no question that the rats are going to jump. But I think there are lots of people poised to jump. I think that you got to understand there are still some swamp snakes, but I think there are a lot of people who are now going, you know what? We grossly underestimated this guy, and now the cake's about to hit the fan, so we need to start looking for an exit plan. And the closer that comes to reality, the better for us. So, look, here's the other thing, and I don't know if you know this, but everybody was looking for a place to go after Facebook, because I warned everybody, Facebook and the media, they're going to try to, you know, they're not going to let our stuff get heard. So I started a site like Facebook called TeaPartyCommunity.org, and we started organizing in Arizona. We're going to have about 600,000 people just in the state of Arizona that are really tackling projects, and we're initiating lawsuits against sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, individuals who want those. We're putting a lot of pressure on them, things like that. So, and the difference is that, and I'm using Arizona as an example. When Donald Trump talks about the wall, partially it needs to be built in Arizona. We want to make sure he gets no friction, that he understands that everybody in the food chain supports it. We're going to, with 600,000 Arizonans on top of the normal group of Republicans or whomever, there should be no doubt that we want this border wall built. And more importantly, believe it or not, Arizona is no longer a red state. It's really closer to being a blue state. We got a Sinema. Go look at her record and tell me how this woman gets elected to the Senate. And we've got a rhino, McSally, who got appointed and didn't even care that she lost because she knew she was going to get the appointment. And we have a governor who's just using this as a stepping stone because he wants to be president. We've got to make sure that at the very lowest levels, we're going to make sure that we maintain true conservatism. And we're going to multiply this model in at least 8 battleground states and possibly 10, so that we have no chance of having a Hillary Clinton or a Barack Obama have their butts in that Oval Office ever again. But we've got to back him up. And let me tell you, America, this is the only chance we're going to get with somebody that has the kind of guts, you know, pick whatever part of the body you want. You can use genitalia if you want, but we are not going to get another chance to have a Trump. I'll put it to you that way.
Kevin Jackson, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. In the last 2 minutes we got, if you could, where can people go to find out more information about you, sign up for maybe newsletters or whatever? And also, if you could take just a brief moment and talk specifically to the millennial generation about why they should be involved and where they should go to learn about what the lies are and where the truth is.
Well, on the millennials, I'll say this. None of us, Matt, most of us, most of the people out there that are listening, we don't have to fight. I mean, if I did nothing else, my life would be amazing. You know, I'd be going to the French Riviera and working on my tan, you know, for the rest of my life, because I don't need to do this. We're doing this for you guys. And we're doing it for all the right reasons. We don't have a dog in the hunt. The only thing we're trying to do is make sure we preserve the America that we know and love for you guys. And leftists are trying to destroy it. They want to destroy it because they're mad that we were right and they were wrong. I'm not mad at leftists. I'm mad at anybody that sides on wrong versus right. So that's number one. Number two, how do you get a hold of me? KJRadio.com is my radio show. It's much like this, only I'm a little funnier over there. So you can check it out there. It's on demand. It's on Spreaker, iTunes, everywhere. Just the Kevin Jackson Show, so that they can pick that up. And TeaPartyCommunity.org, I'm challenging every conservative to not only join it, get other people to join it, and get in the fight. We're initiating lawsuits. We're funding stuff. I mean, we're going to do some amazing stuff that the Tea Party movement never thought of. And then finally, the blacksphere.net is where you can read my ramblings. So the article that Matt was talking about is over there. The Blacksphere, SPHERE.net.
All right, Kevin Jackson, thanks once again for joining me on Patriot Radio, and love to have you on again. Keep up the fight, and love your warrior spirit, man. I really do.
Same here, Matt. Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
All right. So, again, theblacksphere.net. Go check it out. Sign up for his news alerts. It's outstanding. And that article, when you read it, about the least-known conspirator, the way that he set it up, it's incredible. Blew my mind. That's why we got him on the show. I want to take a moment. Did you hear that? That's how we should be talking as Americans, just dialoguing. Just dialoguing as free people that love this country, that love freedom and liberty, love the right to bear arms. Don't let people divide you. Don't let those religious spirits, don't let those political spirits divide you. Draw into the Lord. Drawn to his presence. And if we do that, we can't help but be united. This is Matt Shea. Thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you. And may he make this generation the greatest one. Session starts on Monday. Pay attention.